Reuben Langdon. Does that name sound familiar? He's probably, what I read about Reuben? He's the most well-known actor you don't know who he is. He's an actor. He's a stuntman. He's a producer. He's produced some shorter documentaries, I guess you would call them, about, he's really taken a turn in his life towards finding the truth. And I love that because that's what I've kind of been doing my whole life, is seeking answers. And I'm sure there are many of us doing that. And there are many different ways to do that. So Reuben is in Big Bear, California, not too far from Los Angeles with me. He's about 3 hours behind. How you doing, Reuben?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
I heard you want to... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, it was actually the, I think, the quote from one of those articles and write-ups was the most famous actor you've never seen.
That's what it is, yes.
Because of all my motion capture work.
You have done a lot of that, but you've also done a lot of stunt work. You were big in Japan. Now, what was your involvement with Avatar, if you don't mind?
Sure. Yeah, I was brought on early on to do some test shoots, and for several months leading up to the actual production of the film, I was involved with some of the action design and stunt performances of the test shoots. And then once they rolled into the actual production, which ended up being extended out for 4 years, I was the main stunt double for Jake Sully. His avatar. So whenever, not when he's in the wheelchair, but whenever he was the blue guy running around,
right,
falling off of horses and learning how to fly his banshee and all that stuff, that was me actually performing most of the physical actions and stunts.
You know, and the reason I wanted to bring that up is because Avatar, to me, is one of those movies that has such a deeper message, and so many people flock to it. Did you feel that way after the movie or sometime during the movie?
Absolutely. I mean, when we were in production, that was sort of when I started going through my personal transformation into getting me on the path where I'm at now, was during the production of that film. And, everybody on the film knew it was special, knew that it was going to be something that's never been seen before. And working under James Cameron, and, we were very, I felt that in the moment, I felt very honored, and I still do feel honored to be a part of such an amazing project on so many levels, from a technical level to the story to the honoring of our indigenous and the earth and the planet and the connection to nature, all of that, all the messages in there.
And that's why I thought the movie was so powerful and why it resonated, because the time was right. People are waking up, and there's an inner truth that you can see. Not everybody sees it, but they sense it, they feel it, and it just draws them. And you've seen that with movies throughout the past. There's certain ones, Avatar obviously comes to mind as one of the most recent, that touched us on a deeper level, that kind of woke us up a little bit, is the way that's what I took away from it.
Yeah, definitely woke me up. I was, growing up, my mom was sort of into esoteric things, and I was exposed a little bit to alternative ideas and ways of thinking, but didn't really embrace them growing up. I sort of poo-pooed all that stuff and just wanted to, be like Bruce Lee and fight and do martial arts and, look cool. And so I sort of, that was the path I was on. And then it was really during the filming of Avatar, I was being exposed to indigenous teachings. James Cameron wanted us to learn as much as we could about different indigenous cultures. He sort of took the indigenous cultures of around the world, and that was the base for the Navi, just all of the, mm-hmm. their belief systems, their ways of life, their clothing, and he took from all of them. And in the studio, we had pictures of different indigenous cultures from all over the world.
That's why
everywhere.
That's why that movie, I think, reached all of us on such a deeper level, because James Cameron was willing to do that, and that was very smart, because it's a truth, I think, that exists in all of us that we're starting to rediscover. So you do a lot of when did you start, and what made you start to go down this road? I guess maybe like Avatar, but you've been involved with channeling and working with channelers. What made you decide to do that? And then we can talk about what channeling is a little bit.
Sure. Well, so back on Avatar, actually, while I was working on set, I sort of took the red pill, so to say. You know, that term now is become a mainstream term. My fellow colleagues and I would be on set or sort of in the back room waiting to be on set. During the early days, there was a lot of technical issues with the technology because Jim was pushing the tech for the motion capture further than anybody had done at that time. He's always been an innovator in that sense. So there was a lot of computer crashes and glitches. So us performers had a lot of downtime to sort of wait for the computers to get fixed. And during that time, YouTube was just getting off the ground. Who knew it was going to be what it is today? But people were uploading all of these videos, like Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project from 2001, mm-hmm. to Zeitgeist, to Loose Change, finding out about 9/11, and ETs and secret government programs and all this stuff. And, right. All of our minds were being blown behind set. We were just the small group of us, not everybody on set, but some of the other actors and background stunt performers and things like this. And we were sort of just getting exposed to all this sort of our paradigms, especially for me. I really went deep into it. My paradigm was shifting, finding out about fluoride in the water and, all this stuff. And, so it was right around that time, I don't know what happened first, I forget. I had an incredible sighting. On one of my days off, I had a daytime sighting. I was just at my apartment in Burbank, California, and looked up and saw about maybe 30 to 40 small disc-like crafts. They could have been... not disc, but they were bright lights further out in the sky, and that really sent my mind spinning after that, and I really wanted to know more, I started going further down the rabbit hole as far as researching the ET subject, and ended up going to one of Stephen Greer's contact retreats and doing CE5. I don't know if you're familiar with the CE5 protocols of Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, where you actually go into a meditative state and make contact and reach out. And there's CE5 groups all over the world now, and had some profound experiences there where you actually sort of call them in, and I saw more lights in the sky and got my mind blown even further, and after that continued to do those protocols on my own and continued to have more sightings and kept researching. And after Avatar, the years going, I teamed up with Stephen Bassett and we produced the Citizen Hearing on Disclosure, which was the 5-day event in Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. with the 40 witnesses,
right?
Mostly ex-government folks. So, and I just kept going down further and further down the rabbit hole, so to say. But my research took me, and I started interviewing contactees, abductees, experiencers, psychics, the whole lot. And my research took me down the path of trying to understand the ET phenomenon. And for the most part, what I was getting was a benevolent phenomenon. There was some people that would claim during the abduction phenomenon that it was that they were malevolent, that they were trying to do all this horrible, awful things. And not to take away from those people's experiences, I'm sure they were traumatized and had a lot of negative things happen to them. But I couldn't justify that they were still sitting there in front of me. And if these beings were truly that malevolent, that they would still be here in front of me. Why not just dump them in space? Why put them back? Why go through the effort? If you are truly malevolent and evil, and why even bother putting these people back in their day-to-day lives? And it didn't set well with me, this idea of this malevolent, these malevolent beings, and that a lot of people in the sort of standard UFO research community that I was, your sort of mainstream research community that I was sort of involved in with the citizen hearing and that stuff, some really really good researchers, but a lot of them still sort of took the negative take on it. And that personally, I hadn't had any close contact experiences, so I couldn't really judge, but through all the interviews and research, that just didn't set well with me. And I met Wendy Kennedy, who I didn't know she was a channel at the time. She came to, we had monthly meetup groups at my studio in LA at the time, and we were talking about the subject, and then she mentioned that it was a soul contract, that the abduction phenomenon or the experience phenomenon was a soul contract. And that really rang a bell. And I was like, whoa, that, for whatever reason, that sounded, I want to know more. So I ended up talking to her, found out she was a channel, had known about the channeling phenomenon, but didn't really take it seriously. Didn't really go in there into that direction. But what she had to say really resonated. And then I started listening to other channeled material, Bashar, Nora Harold, who channels Palladians. Some of it initially, you know, especially Bashar, seems kind of kooky, quirky, and, you know, what kind of show is this guy putting on, was my initial thoughts. But when I really started diving into the material, it all started fitting with all the research I had done up until that time. There was especially the personal interviews I had done with a lot of the contactees and experiencers and abductees. So all the puzzle pieces fit together. There was nothing that from the channeling phenomenon, at least from these individuals who I was interviewing and talking to, nothing didn't fit. Like, everything fits so perfectly that it just seemed like, okay, there's something to all this. And that's when I started. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, you've never had an experience close up with another being.
Well, I would say I have now since then.
Okay.
But up until that time, I had not. To my memory, you know, the memories get blocked in a lot of these cases. But consciously, I had no conscious memories of any sort of close encounter experiences other than just seeing lights in the sky from afar. Mm-hmm. So I was just, you know, purely looking at the whole phenomenon from a scientific point of view, I don't really have a science degree or anything like that, but a very logical, you know, way of thinking and one direction. And, you know, I love the scientific method and I love science and exploring. I ran a motion capture studio, which we had to develop our own tech and go into a lot of technology. And I love technology. I love, you know, cutting edge new things. So that's always sort of been my approach to all of this esoteric stuff, is to find the groundedness or the logical side to it all. And channeling is a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow, mm-hmm. because there's not much science there. There's starting to be. We're starting to get more scientific evidence of it, but it's still, for many, it's a hard pill to swallow. For me, just because all the puzzle pieces fit together so well, it was easier to start that path. And once you start that path, for me anyways, once I started on this path of the channel, the interviews and my series Interview with Ed, which I've been running for about 3 years now, 4 years, even longer. Mm. When you start living your life, I should say, by these principles, these teachings that are being taught, you can really start to see that. For me, I really could start to experience a difference. And then my sort of paralleling my research with the channeling, I would also dive into quantum physics and also diving into shamanism and indigenous, going even deeper with the indigenous teachings and what they have to teach and say. So I sort of have many paths. There are many paths to all of this, and you can sort of pick whichever one. But I've been sort of on a parallel of about three or four different paths, and they all seem to mm-hmm. complement each other.
That's what I was going to say.
As opposed to contradict. I haven't had any contradictions, really.
Don't you find it interesting? Because this is what I learned. I've always had more of a natural understanding, belief growing up, maybe up here where I'm at. But also, you know, I kind of got into the New Age thing, metaphysical, whatever you want to call it. And I know some people that are native here, and I know some of the indigenous teachings, and they're so close. It's like, we didn't go together yeah. to school and say, okay, we're going to come. And then I've talked to people all over the world, and you have as well. And mm-hmm. there's this knowing that people have that something's going on, and somehow they want to be connected or be a part of it or bring something forward or come together. You've seen that as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All of this was really, in the beginning, was hard. You know, I was just going after the ET angle initially. And I was like, I just want ETs, everything else, you know, fairies, gnomes, and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's all fake. You know, nobody,
right.
That's ridiculous. But the ET stuff, we have hard evidence. You know, we have the pilots, we have the government officials going who are disclosing the stuff, and we have all the stuff. So yes, ETs. But the more you dive into it, into mm-hmm. this phenomenon, and my buddy Jeremy Corbell, who is my partner now in the Citizen Hearing, he's doing some phenomenal research on Skinwalker Ranch, and he's coming. It's funny, his research is a different path than mine. He doesn't really go down the channeling route. He's a little more grounded, I would say, in my than I am in my with my research. He's more scientific, and he's hanging around guys like Bob Lazar and mm-hmm. George Knapp and Bob Bigelow and going down this path. But his path and we exchange research. We're both coming to the conclusion that the ET phenomenon is not one of how we would perceive ETs. And this is why all of this stuff sort of gets a bad rap, is because and this is why I changed the title of my show. And originally it was Interview with ET. I changed it to Interview with Ed, Extra Dimensionals, mm-hmm. because all of this stuff is a dimensional, how we understand dimensions and parallel realities and timelines. It's closer to that than we would consider or could think of an extraterrestrial phenomenon. So when we start to understand that, then we're not limiting our understanding and beliefs to just one specific concept or idea.
Right. A lot of people say, well, if the ETs are coming here, they've got to travel so many light years just, or have some kind of wormhole. But if they're dimensional, multi-dimensional beings, then they can show up and be here in a moment. And I think they can do that even if they're traveling through space. They've conquered a way. They found a way to do that rather quickly as well. So it leaves us many different options as far as what is visiting us. And I don't know if you want to talk more about channeling at this point, because I believe, and I think, to me, channeling is just stepping aside and drawing on something to speak through you, even just inspiration. When I go on the radio every day, I'm maybe acting, you do this, Ruben, you kind of tap into something else, right?
Yeah, actually, that's what, going down the research, doing the research on channeling, we're all channelers. We all do it. It's and to sort of set the groundwork for understanding channeling, I like to set the groundwork for the constructs of our reality. What is our actual physical reality made of? And this is where quantum physics and string theory and the Nikola Tesla's quotes and these kinds of things that scientific evidence that we have now that shows us that our reality is 99.999% air, nothing, right? Mm-hmm. The space between the molecules is so vast, but we perceive it as matter, and there's the observation effect, which sort of snaps the particle into from a wave into an actual physical particle, just by the act of observing it, the double slit experiment, mm-hmm. and all of the mm-hmm. stuff that we've had for decades now. This is nothing new, but I think humanity is sort of getting more of this information and absorbing it and understanding it a little bit more. So when Tesla and others have talked about how the our reality is made up of vibrational frequencies, waveforms of frequencies, and how we perceive it and what frequencies we put out sort of attract the law of attraction, these other waveforms and this quantum field, behind the veil, I like to say, and the shamanism, they talk about, the dream worlds and the other world, which is, we perceive the reality the way it is now, but there's a quantum soup or a field behind this reality that everything and all possibilities exist. And as we're vibrating or tuning ourselves daily or all the time, we're always sort of tuned to a specific channel. We're all sort of tuned to the channel Earth right now. Mm-hmm. And as we shift our frequency, and there's a number of modalities we can do that with, most common would be the meditative state. We can then access other information that's behind the veil, that's not limited by space-time, mm-hmm. That has it's infinite in its possibilities, and it's also accessible through the quantum. And channeling, the act of channeling, the art of channeling, is simply tuning yourself to a specific frequency and matching this frequency behind the veil of whatever, if it's a Palladian or a Bashar or a Draconian or whatever it is, to match that frequency, and then you can access the information. So a lot of people think that, this being is coming into my body and I'm being possessed. And this is sort of the traditional perception of channeling and, the exorcist or that kind of idea of evil demon entities coming through, which I validate. I said, yeah, that's all possible. But just as you can bring through an evil entity, you can also tune yourself to bring through a positive entity, you mm-hmm. know, an angel, an angelic energy, a fairy, a gnome, a reptilian lizard, if you want, or a Palladian.
And then I was just going to say, we also, I mean, what you set your intention and the people I work with also, they always, what they do is they call it protecting themselves with light or surrounding themselves or drawing from the source, whatever you want to call it, so that sure. they always go for the highest level, which is love, you know, unconditional love. So they always try to aim for that. Is that what you're saying too as well, Ruben?
Absolutely. So the idea is when you sort of go into this quantum state, this meditative form, you're tuning yourself to a specific frequency to match these others. And sort of go back, you're not really bringing through another entity is coming through you. You're simply matching the frequency of what the other being is. So then you can access the information and bring the information through. So nobody's possessing you and nobody's taking right. over your body. You're simply tuning yourself to a specific channel, hence the word channeling, mm-hmm. That these other beings or other energies, and not all of them are beings, some of them are collective, some of them are just...
There's unlimited. Don't you think there's
physical,
like
yeah.
unlimited amount of beings out there? The more I delve into this, Ruben, the
Absolutely.
More I find it's like, there's infinite. I mean, you're never going to get them all.
You can't, yeah. I mean, if, you know, I think Bashar has a quote out there. If you can imagine it, it exists. You know, that's the unlimited potential of different beings and energies. And, you know, it's not limited to just physical beings. There's realms out there of just energy. Collectives is a big, in my series, I interview a lot of collective energies, which are, you know, for example, planet Earth, Mother Gaia is a collective energy of all of humanity, all of the animals and plant kingdom, and everything that's part of Earth is looped up or wrapped up into one big collective energy. And when you put all that together, that's a very powerful, wise, energy that you can actually communicate with mm-hmm. and have a conversation with. So we're all going back to us. We're all channelers and we all have the potential and we're all channeling even whether we are aware of it or not. Mm-hmm. When we get into this zone of following our excitement, of doing what we love, we sort of naturally get on this high frequency and we're putting out this frequency of, you know, love, because that's what we're doing. We're doing what we love, and excitement and we're sort of matching other frequencies that match our own personal frequency. And we're bringing through, again, consciously or unconsciously, we're bringing through this energy from another dimension, from another parallel universe. And we are channeling that in. And whether it's through art, through sports, through whatever we love to do, cooking, you know, that's where inspiration comes from.
Yep.
That's where all of our great inventions and great artists from around the world are doing incredible feats, you know, because we're not limiting ourselves and we're not judging. We're not in the moment. We're just simply flowing. We're going with the flow. Mm-hmm. And the more I study this phenomenon, the more I understand it. There is science to it. There's a great book called Feeling Fire, which talks about flow states. And Jason Silva, who is sort of a well-known personality on TV and different TV shows and things like that, he's a motivational speaker. He talks about flow states, and he actually gets into these flow states and starts spewing out all this great information. And essentially, these people are just channeling. In my book, they're not they're using the term flow states, but mm-hmm. it's the same concept, it's the same idea. And you have folks like Daryl Anka who get into that state and who have been doing that for years now and can get into that state very easily. And they're able to tap into these other beings from other dimensional realms and bring through higher information that we can use in our daily lives.
So there's really a lot of beings out there that are serving us, that are trying to, they're all kind of connected. They're all understanding that it's part of oneness, and they are in many different levels of dimension or wherever, because I can't quite define it, but
yeah,
there are so many, and some of them have been recorded in our history. How do you think that they've been interacting with us throughout time?
I think the channeling phenomenon has been probably one of the oldest modalities for connecting with these beings. And you have cases of this through shamanism, through a lot of religions, you know, that even, you know, Christianity, you know, people speak in tongues and have different experiences. You know, I think a lot of that is the channeling phenomenon. It's just been labeled differently.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, you know, I've talked to VTs about this, or the EDs, and they say the biological human technology, the machine of the human, is such a powerful technology, and it's the easiest to sort of shift the frequencies. You know, we can individually, we can go into this meditative state and we can access the quantum. We're doing it unconsciously every day, no matter what. But when we can sort of consciously focus and go into these realms, then we can access, you know, and this is how we already have psychics. And I'm sure on your show, you've had different people who mm-hmm. can, for example, access the Akashic records mm-hmm. and go psychics who can sort of see different potential realities from the, you know, talking about your future or past. And we have, you know, famous psychics, Edgar Cayce, and all of these, all of this phenomenon that's sort of already recorded and exists, and we're talking about it all the time. We just simply think that we can't do it, but individually we all can. We can go into these states, we can access and channel. And I think the human construct, the human body and the technology around it has been doing this since the beginning of time. So the VTs say that the human technology has been for years and still is the easiest technology to access these realms. And then we get other modalities outside of channeling, where, you know, physical beings actually show up in our physical state. And the way they describe it is that's a little more work for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier for them to meet us halfway.
Right.
So when we go into the channeling state, it's sort of a 50-50. It's a meeting between worlds and realms.
Similar to like having spirit contact, if you've had like a loved one that's passed away.
Yeah.
If they're... Absolutely. They seem to meet us easier when we're in a dreamlike state. They will come to people quite often. And it's just the way I heard it years ago is that our brains are operating on certain types of beta waves or alpha waves. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. But they're on a certain wavelength. And when we get to that state, it's like they can communicate with us a lot easier. And I'm guessing that's what you're kind of saying here as well.
That's the same thing, yeah. The sort of the ghost phenomenon, loved ones passed on, they all sort of exist in this quantum soup. And that's why you have psychics and intuitives who can see that on a day-to-day basis, or personally, you know, if we're not as in tune, so to say, as the psychics, then we can access this information in the dream state. And the dream state is talked about a lot in my interviews. as being sort of a nice meeting place because it's more malleable. It's a sort of in between worlds. I like to use, you know, modern examples of to get people's heads wrapped around this. I don't know if you've seen the movie Doctor Strange, the Marvel film. They talk about the mirror world as being sort of a safe zone where they can practice their magic and do all this stuff. And I sort of see the dream state as this mirror world where you can do incredible feats and have all these crazy experiences, but not directly affect this realm that we're in. And ETs also, their realms, they exist in their own realms, and they can meet us in this nice mirror halfway world in the dream state.
What are the EDs or ETs or whoever you've communicated with, what do they say about the history of humans and why we're here? Have they given you information? And how much interaction have they had?
Well, good question. My next episode, actually, I'm editing it now from a channel named Diet. That's the bulk of that episode is all about going deep into the history of humanity. And it gets a little complicated because it's not so cut and dry how we would expect. Most of us perceive time and space in a linear sense. That's starting to change now as we're evolving, but we sort of see things as the past is the past, the future is the future. But as we evolve and we're getting a better understanding of space and time, it's not so cut and dry. And our past changes with our current, our past and our future change with our current frequency or vibration as we're moving into different timelines. In every second, every moment, we're shifting collectively and individually. And our past sort of shifts with us to match the frequency that we're in the moment. So we have, this talk of Atlantis and talk of, the human race actually being seeded by ETs. The Anunnaki is a big, many of your listeners have heard of the Anunnaki and Zachariah Sitchin and his work. And it's not through the ET interviews I've had, the ED interviews, they talk a lot about the Anunnaki, a lot about Atlantis, a lot about ancient civilizations. Other than that, the several that we've been part of, Maldek, another planet that was destroyed in our solar system to create the asteroid belts out there that are now floating around Saturn and whatnot. And so we've had, they talk about all these different histories, but they also say it's shifting because of our current frequency, our current paradigm and how we shift. So as we evolve, we're opening ourselves up to a deeper, richer history than what we understood of simply, being on this planet. Some of us still believe this for 5,000 years, that's when humanity in this planet was birthed. But through their eyes, humanity's been around for a long time. And we've sort of just had different renditions or different versions of humanity. And where we're at now is we're a hodgepodge, a mix of different ET races, mostly coming from, the Anunnaki themselves were also sort of a mixed hybrid race of many different ET civilizations. And then they took their DNA and mixed it with the indigenous, ape DNA. And then that's how we sort of came about initially. And then through the years and millennia, we've had other DNA injunctions and mixtures. And so we're truly a hybrid race. And we're sort of coming to know that. And we're moving, where we're headed is to be even more hybridized once we start to make contact with different races. As it's been going on behind the scenes through, you know, with the grays and the Zeta races and all of that. So we're in the future, we're truly going to be a, it seems, a super hybridized race of different ETs and DNA, and which sort of allows us to become bridges of worlds. You know, if you think about a interracial marriage here on this planet, the child, and then they have children, and you know, let's, for example, my wife is from Japan, and if we were to have kids, the kids would grow up knowing two different cultures, speaking two different languages, at least, maybe more, depending on what part of the planet they grow up in, and they're sort of seeded from the beginning with different ideas and concepts of two different cultures, religions. And then by the time they grow up, they've had a rich history, an exposure to many different things than just say just someone growing up in one central part of the world. So when you can sort of think on a grander scale of humanity being a hybrid or a interracial, interdimensional, seeded race, planet. So we have access to, the only thing is we've sort of forgotten where we've come from, but more of us.
I'm sorry, Ruben. I was going to ask you, because I've always kind of had this theory, and haven't heard it from many, but I think a lot of the races, you know, because they're so different, the races as far as we look, and you know, the theory is, well, we all came from a certain spot, and then we move into different parts of the continent, you know, we evolve differently. And I just think maybe we all, not all races, but a lot of races came from different parts of the galaxy or the universe.
That's what they say.
That's what they say? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they so there's different, there's Lemuria, which was sort of a pre-Atlantis civilization. Many of us have Lemurian history, or a physical DNA.
That was the one that was over by the Hawaiian Islands, right? That ran over towards, I think, Asia. It was like a land, stretch of land, from what I understand.
Yeah, and it's all over the globe. The way they talk about this is, you know, the Atlantis itself, which is still, we're going to sort of come to, say over the next 10 years or so, we should have physical discoveries. A lot of people now are doing, there's a lot of great research coming out of Antarctica, with maybe people are pointing at Antarctica as possibly being the main headquarters of Atlantis, and the ETs haven't confirmed or denied that, but it seems to be, on the physical research sense, that might be the case. But Lemuria was another ancient civilization, and there's pockets on the islands, you know, through Hawaii and the Fiji Islands, and all throughout the areas there we have that civilization. So yeah, there's different ancient civilizations on the earth that still survive. There was great catastrophes that sort of, especially with Atlantis, we've all heard of that one, that sort of wiped out a huge chunk of the population on the planet at these specific times. But yet, not everybody was completely wiped out. You know, there's pockets of different civilizations.
I was just going to say there's also what I've done some research on, and I don't know if you've come across this, but there were those, like when Atlantis and maybe other civilizations, when the Earth became a place where people could not exist on the top of it, or maybe there was wars going on, a lot of them went to the inner Earth, the hollow Earth. And I believe that I believe the Earth is hollow, and ETs have talked about this, and others have talked about this, and there are beings living there right now. And these beings are approximately 8 feet or taller. And a lot of the Lemurians were 8 feet or taller. A lot of the Atlanteans were tall beings. So some of what I've heard, and I don't know if you've heard this as well, is that that's where they went. They went to, and then when they come out to check on us with their ships, they open a doorway. And if we're caught in that, those doorways are at different locations. And one of those doorways, and there are many, but one of those is Bermuda area. And this is, to me, it's an explanation of why these things go on.
Absolutely. So they talk a lot about, you know, inner Earth beings, they do exist. Just to sort of give your audience a better understanding, and this sort of was a hiccup for me too, because I couldn't scientifically understand how this all worked. You know, if there's beings here, why aren't we seeing them all the time? And the way they explained it to me is everything, as I was saying earlier, everything sort of operates at a vibrational frequency. And there's a classification that I've started. Rob Gothier is one of the channelers, and he does a great explanation of this and on my YouTube channel and in my series. I have three interviews with him discussing densities and dimensions. And it's sort of a meter, a level to measure different evolutionary states of consciousness. And right now, humanity, all of the ETs talk about this, humanity is sort of in this in-between zone of moving from third density to fourth density. And the density levels sort of correlate with our chakra systems and the rainbow, and you can sort of you use first density consciousness would be sort of really hard rocks and wood and sort of dead elements, as we would perceive dead, even though nothing is truly dead. Everything is flowing and alive, but it's just in a harder state of density. And then the next level would be second density, which we would sort of understand plant life and animal life. And third density consciousness was where sort of humanity was at for, you know, eons. And we're moving, the 25,000 year cycle has come around, and we're moving out of this third density consciousness. We're moving into fourth density. So all the ETs sort of talk about the 2012 mark as being this marker point in our space time for this transformation into fourth density consciousness. And it's not, they say it's not as, you know, 2012, bam, you're fourth density. It's sort of a nice gradual transition over time, which they say sort of started with the harmonic convergence in 1987. Mm-hmm. And we're gradually moving into, you know, 2012 and then past. And eventually, maybe over, you know, another 10 or 20 years, we'll fully be fourth density consciousness. And so using the density scale, you can, and I do this when I interview with the ETs, I sort of ask them, what density are they existing at? What density consciousness? And a lot of our inner Earth beings have, since they've been around for so long, they have moved up into fourth density and some of them even beyond, but they're existing at a level where, because it's not in the same plane of existence, and we can't see them all the time. So if we were to go drill into the inner Earth and try to find these beings, it's not like they're going to be there. We would have to raise our consciousness to a state where we can perceive fourth density consciousness, and we are. And some of these higher density beings can then lower their consciousness states to then interact. And this is why, again, we see in dreams, and there's pockets on the planet, meridians and ley lines and sort of sacred sites that are higher in their vibrational frequency. They're sort of higher density from the get-go because of all of the intention and shamanic work and all of the things that have been going on in these. And we know, Sedona, Arizona, we know, Easter Island or, the rock formation, Stonehenge,
Peru.
Peru, there's different spots in Peru that are, that constantly people are seeing ships and having these far-out experiences. And that's because of these specific areas on the planet, they have been tuned to these higher frequencies. And that's where, we get the pyramids and we get all of this stuff happening all over the planet. And in those specific spots, not just the ones I mentioned, but they're all over the planet. and even when we go underground, we can sometimes shift into a higher density reality. And then, like I said, it becomes easier to perceive these other beings. They can interact with us, and we can have this physical contact. Yeah, physical dialogue, not just in the channeling state, but in a physical sense. And that's where we have Sasquatch and all of these other, Bigfoot and these interactions. They're there one moment and then they're gone.
Right. They have the ability to, and it seems like, come and go at will. But I wanted to, because a lot of what people call metaphysical New Age people are talking about you're talking densities, but not only the density, but the Earth is third dimension, and we're going from third to fifth dimension, higher consciousness. And this is kind of like an agreement that we've kind of made this decision. The Earth is making this decision. It no longer is going to allow, we've had separation, duality, and what some people would call dark energy, or just the absence of light. I don't really label it. And that's been kind of allowed to run things, for a long time. What are the ETs? Is there similar language in that, what I'm talking about? Do you see that?
Absolutely. Yeah, they talk all the time. This correlates with the moving from fourth density to fifth density. Along in the density scale, there's dimensions, and this is the talk. And depending on the channel, they have a little bit different vocabulary. It depends on what they've been exposed to and their own ideas and concepts, and they sort of translate with their own filter. And what I do with my series is I try to connect all the dots, and even if the channel is using a different language during the interview, I sort of ask them to rephrase it in this way. Can that work? And I'm sort of creating a synopsis, a glossary of language between all of these different channelers.
Well, do you find I'm sorry, Ruben. I was just going to ask you, do you find that when you deal with different channels, because I've had this as well, is that they say some things and they don't quite line up with another one, and is it maybe just their interpretation of it or the source that they're going through?
Yeah, I think in essence, from all the different interviews I've done, basically they're all saying the same thing. I think it does just come down to the specific channelers, their vocabulary, their how they sort of perceive reality, because they're going through a filter. So there's not a single channel on the planet that is pure, 100%. You have to have that physical being in front of you, having that dialogue, and even then, it's going through your perception channel, and you're going to perceive it and understand it and translate that message in your own unique way. So all of these channelers have their own spin, so to say, their own vocabulary, their own way of translating the message from the quantum, from this state. But in the interviews I've done, generally they're all on the same page. And this is where, we get hung up on the specifics, and we're saying, well, this person's that person, who's right, who's wrong, And that's where I sort of like, oh, okay, there, let's just forget about the little specifics. And just because one says this and the other says that, then we're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, they're all wrong, or this is bad and that person's wrong and this person's right. Generally, they're all saying the same thing. And I try to, like I was saying, try to find the language that connects them all. And yes, they are all saying we are moving, like you said, from third to fifth dimension. It's actually, we're, you know, going into the scientific dissection of it all, we're actually in the fourth dimension already. Mm-hmm. With the XYZ axis and space-time. Einstein said space-time interconnected is our fourth dimensional state of reality. Now we're moving into the fifth dimension, or fourth density of consciousness. And in fourth density, you can perceive things in the fifth dimension and even up into, I believe, the sixth dimension before you reach fifth density. So dimensions and density sort of correlate together, but they are sort of a different, it's a different language. Different.
Let me ask you this, if I can, Ruben. If I can think of what I'm going to ask, no, I'm going to ask you, a lot of people are saying, and I'm sensing some, I mean, this is a great shift. They call it the great shift of the ages.
Absolutely.
And we are returning to more of what we really are. And many are saying, and I truly believe this in my heart, that we will be unlimited beings when we make this transition. And a lot of the things that we see here, war and hunger, and all those things will disappear because our consciousness level will be able to, will leave, you know, all these things. The beings that are creating some of this don't want to be a part of that. And then also, we will become these creators like we're intended to be, and we'll fully understand that and be able to create what we need and what we want. Is that what they're telling you?
That's exactly what they're telling me. They are... going back to sort of this idea of the hybridization, because humanity has been so deep in the trenches, so to say, we've been for thousands of years, we've been in some of the darkest places, that can possibly be imagined. You know, humanity has seen some really rough times, still does see some rough times now, but collectively, globally, we are being interconnected through the internet, through, the world is now becoming smaller and smaller, and we're sharing ideas and cultures. And because the idea of separation, we've been so separate for so long, and we're coming out of that. And once we can actually learn to get along, which we're doing, you know, slowly but surely, we're figuring it all out. Different cultures, different religions and belief systems and races and all of this stuff. And as we're sort of can fit all the pieces together where we can get along, then we then become and are becoming, and this is this back to this hybridization project that I was telling you about, that... in the universe, in the galaxy, we are going to become sort of a looked up to because we've been so deep down in the trenches. We can then be guides and service to other civilizations in the future who also are at a lower density and are going through their own evolution and their own problems and situations. But because we've been there and done that, then we can say, you know, we can offer help, offer guidance to other civilizations.
And that's
the role of humanity. Yeah, that's sort of the role of humanity is what they're talking about.
So, you know, this is how I perceive this whole ball of wax, because it's really cool. And I'm glad you're going down all these different avenues. Very rarely do I have a guest that's going to go in these directions, but I just think, you know, we are here because we choose this. We chose separation because we wanted to experience. You can't know what something is if you don't know what it isn't. And so this whole thing that's going on, and there's different levels, and so we've allowed us to be in this where we are now, And now we want to remember. We've chosen now collectively to say, okay, let's just remember a little bit more. And so we're given this great freedom to be on whatever level, if you want to call it density, that we choose, because it's just a never-ending mm-hmm. journey. And so, like you say, at some point, some of us may be there down the road to help others that are coming out of their level of density. And I think also some of us might just go, you know what? I just want to be a blob. I want to be a little blob or speck or float through somewhere. And I think we have this great freedom to go. There's so much more out there, that especially, and even the ones that you communicate with, are there dimensions that are beyond them that maybe they don't quite clearly see?
Absolutely. Yeah, you summed it up right there. That's sort of the human story is what they all seem to agree on. The several dozen plus interviews I've done, we have humanity has chosen to forget, individually and collectively. We have chosen to forget where we come from. And it's this process of remembering, remembering our history, remembering our star families, remembering where we come from, and then sharing that with, and interacting with other civilizations and other individuals, and that whole process, that's why we're here. We're here to experience the awakening, and that's why there's so many people on this planet. There's over 7 billion souls, and it's growing to go through this journey of awakening to who we truly are.
Now, Ruben, let me ask you this, because there's another thing I have a question on. Gee, I have a lot of questions, but I have a question on...
No, great.
I think not in my perception, and what I've been told, maybe not everybody is here to do that. I mean, more and more souls are coming here to do that, but some of the souls that are still here are locked into the old game of, I was born, I did something, I'm going to reincarnate, or whatever that case may be. They're locked into that separation mentality and duality, and maybe they don't want to leave that. And so from what I understand, as we transition towards this fourth density, this fifth dimension, some of those souls are eventually just going, you know what, too much light, I'm leaving. And so not everybody's here for the same thing, are they?
No, they're not. And that's the beauty of, free will, which we have in this universe, which we have on this planet. And we have the free will choice in any moment in time, space time, to choose the direction of our evolution. The ego that plays a big part of this. And in my interviews, I get into this, especially with Lisa Royale in my latest interview. We discuss the role of the ego and our higher selves, so to say, our oversoul. And a lot of people, yes, you're absolutely right. They're not here for the, I would take that back. Actually, everybody's here for the evolution of the planet, whether it's, we perceive it as a negative or a positive thing. It's still aiding in the evolution. Mm-hmm. And some beings are here simply to be the, the assholes, the evil people. But that's still of service,
right,
to elevate and right, to wake up. And I put Donald Trump in this category. wake up humanity for the betterment of the rest. And they may not want to go on this higher density, higher dimensional journey. They may want to stay exactly where they are, and they can. This is why we sort of have Bashar talks about, and many of the others talk about, in metaphorical terms, the splitting of Earth, the two trains going on a different path. And in reality, it's much more than just two, but
some people, channels and psychics that I've talked to, Ruben, have said that there actually will be two physical Earths, and those that want to move on to the fifth dimension, fourth density, will experience that, and then those that want to continue the chaos and don't want to leave will be on a separate. Do you have you heard anything about that?
Yes, that's exactly how it's put to me as well. The only difference I would say is the two earth concept is we speak in terms of twos just because it's easy to understand that idea. In reality, it's infinite. There are billions of potential earth planes in any moment, in any second. So it's not as simple as just two, but to understand the concept of the splitting idea and how certain people are going to go one direction and other people are going to go another. It doesn't mean we're going to have this massive tear in space time and these people, it's more of a gradual thing. And I would say as the energy of our individual vibration of where we're headed, you know, you and I can sort of perceive a planet where there's peace, no more wars, people are taking care of each other, you know, homeless people are no more, you know, starving children are no more. We're sort of all taking care of each other. We can see that potential future there, and we're moving that direction. There are potential futures where there are more wars and more separation. And that's also another potential future that people who are in our timeline right now will, versions of them will go that direction. And what we will do is we'll simply, you know, people who we think, you know, the Donald Trumps of the world, who think that they are, you know, Donald Trump's not just going to poof and disappear from the planet. The direction of our evolution, we're either going to start to interact with a different version of Donald Trump, a Donald Trump version that is not the egotistical guy that we are used to seeing. We'll start to interact with a more gentler, a Donald Trump version that's going to be in line
with. You know what, though? I was going to say, Ruben, yeah. I see, and maybe it's an act, but I do see a shift in him. As I see usually at most everybody once they get into those positions. And another person that was a psychic said he really, you know, he volunteered at a higher level to do this because he's a reflection of so many people on this planet. And this was a good opportunity for people to see that. And so we can all grow with that. And then on top of that, we can also forgive somebody that we think maybe has some discretions or some difficulties.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the way I look at it. It's like, you know, when you get to that point of being president, they all probably do things that are being manipulated that aren't in our best interest. And because there are players, right, at many levels, and these players have been kind of running things for a long, long time. And so, but what I do like about it gives all of us a chance to have compassion for no matter whoever sits in that position of authority, because we can see their frailties and their, it gives us a great opportunity, is the way I look at it, to have more love.
Yeah, and that's what they say. They say, you know, one of the reasons he's where he's at right now is to reflect back to humanity. You know, they all talk about our physical reality is a reflection of what's inside, both individually and collectively. So everything we see in our external world is what's inside of us individually. And when we see, you know, the hatred, when we see the mudslinging, and we see all of this infighting and everything else, that's simply a reflection of what's inside of us. And we, in order to clear that, we have to individually go in and do the work. And through, you know, whether it's through our political system that's happening right now, this major shift that's happening in our political system, or whether it's in our neighborhood and the fighting and the bickering with your neighbors or what, you know, a family, all of that is simply coming to the surface, because in this higher density, fourth dimension, fifth dimension that we're going into, these energies can't exist.
Right.
It's a frequency. Like I was saying, everything is a frequency. So you can't, if you want to be at this high vibe frequency and you have lower vibrational frequency thoughts and ideas and ways of life, that has to shift. You can't keep doing that. Otherwise, you're not going to move into this higher evolutionary stage. You're simply going to stay where you're at or go into the other earth that we were talking about.
All these things are coming up to help us clear them. And this is what I've heard. And what you said is, it so lines up with what I heard, is that, and what I feel, absolutely feel. And this happens to me. Here I think I'm this enlightened being, and then these little lessons come along every day.
Absolutely.
And you go, I guess I'm not quite ready. And because you have to let go and be at peace at all times and not allow things to affect you. So it's this great balancing, what I've been talking about on my show for a long time, Ruben. You nailed it on the head, that we are being deliberately balanced. And if there's chaos in your life right now, it's there for a reason, to give you an opportunity to let go and make peace. And that's the only way we can move forward. That's what the EDs and the ETs are saying.
Wow. That's it. And it's not just one of them. They all say this. They all, again, have their different terminologies and words. But in my show and through my interviews, they've all been saying it. And over the past couple of years, I've been taking a lot of what they say into my daily practices and, you know, just how I operate, how I think, and how I react to different situations in my life. Mm-hmm. And through the act of surrender, through the act of forgiveness, through the act of following my excitement and having compassion and love for all that there is, and, you know, trying not to have judgment over certain ideas, you know, just, I mentioned Donald Trump.
Actually, it's easy. It's easy to have that.
I actually, you know, don't have anything against the guy or anything. I know that there's certain things that he's doing on the outside that everybody's getting pissed off at. But, you know, it's more, like you said, have compassion for the guy, have compassion for everyone in our reality that's sort of going through a rough time.
Well, he's also, you know, he's bringing great awareness. You know, look at all the things that have happened, how we, you know, the way he talked about women and treated them. And then all of a sudden now you're hearing so many things coming out, even in Hollywood, about the way women have been treated. And so he's been a real good source to provide a lot of these things that are waking
us up.
He's
a catalyst for change.
And it truly takes, I think, a very enlightened soul, even though he doesn't appear that way, to take on that role before you go in that lifetime. Are you not saying, yeah, sign me up, I'll do that, I'll take on that role and I'll play that role? Or are you oblivious to it? And I think we're not oblivious. I think we pick these roles so we can give people the greatest opportunity. People want to praise Gandhi and Martin Luther King, but we also, I think, need to look at the ones that played the other role and gave us a great opportunity. Go ahead.
Well, since we're on the topic of Donald Trump, another part of this work that I've been doing is with, I've been working on another documentary, filming the shamans working with ayahuasca, which is a very powerful psychedelic tea. And the shamans from Peru, Amazonian tribes, who started working with this thousands of years ago, the modalities have grown and become quite popular, especially over the years. And I've been following these shamans working with this medicine all over the world, really. And I'll tell you about a specific journey I had, ceremony I had, which was the weekend after the election with Donald Trump. And there was a lot of fear with others and at that time, and even the shamans themselves were like, oh my God, this is the end of the world, you know, or we're not sure, you know, if the world's going to get through this. But it was funny because during that journey, I actually saw, you know, in my mind's eye, a dragon flying in the room. And somehow, I don't know how this all works. It's sort of a psychic, if anybody's ever had any sort of psychic transmissions or downloads, I associated this dragon with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump was this dragon form flying around the room. And with that came a download of energy showing me that this dragon that can be very destructive, you know, breathing fire and sort of causing havoc in our traditional Western idea of what a dragon is. But at the same time, dragons also have this wisdom and this this great power to create change, to evolve, and in our sort of archetypal ideas of what a dragon is in our story, you know, look at Lord of the Rings and these other stories where the dragon is, you know, this being of great power, wisdom, but also destruction. But what that does is, you know, it unites the people to sort of come against this common enemy and to go on their journey. You know, if you look at our Joseph Campbell and his work with the archetypes and Carl Jung and all of this stuff, the dragon is truly a powerful energy for change. And it's funny because during the ceremony, that's what exactly came through. You know, I didn't really have much of an opinion of Donald Trump prior to that. And then since, I've sort of seen this evolution of what's happening with the Trump phenomenon. And I don't know if you follow the QAnon phenomenon and the Q posts, but it seems there's some great change happening behind the scenes that we can actually, you know, in a positive sense. There's all kinds of obviously negative things happening in front of us, you know, with, especially with the in our natural our ecology and our national parks getting cut down and all of this stuff, which I'm highly against all of that stuff that's happening. But there is a massive positive change happening behind the scenes,
right. You know,
if you follow the Q post.
Well, and there's a couple of things I want to mention to you real quick, Ruben, because I don't know how much time you want to go on. We've been doing over an hour, which I, you know, I'd like to do another part of this because there's a lot to be said. But
sure.
Couple of things. You mentioned the dragon, and I have a friend who's a very good psychic medium, healer, energy healer. And we actually channeled, we did a show once about channeling our inner dragon, that we have these dragon guides. And they're not, it's more of a mystical being that we all have, just like we have animal spirit guides, right? That there also is this and what we think of dragons, maybe they aren't what we quite think of them. So to me, it was fascinating. I don't know if that's what you were seeing, but that I think we could have all kinds of metaphysical guides that are assisting us along the way as we make our journey. One other thing I wanted to add also is that I've heard this before from many sources, and I truly feel it because I look at what's happened in the world, and things have been stopped. You know, there have been epidemics that should have probably wiped out a good part of the population, and something stopped it. And I look at the potential of nuclear war, and I've heard time and again that the ETs, there was a time they weren't allowed to interfere. And when we chose love in 1987 in the harmonic conversion, when we decided to go that path, this opened the doorway for them to kind of stick their nose in a little bit in a very gentle way. And what I've heard and read and feel is that they will not allow these things to happen to Gaia. They will step in before we get to that next point of nuclear devastation. They will step in before the next epidemic comes to, because you look, see at all these things that come up. They keep coming up. Oh, there's a new disease. There's a new, oh, then you don't hear anything about it. It's like it just disappeared. Have the ETs or EDs said anything about that?
They have. I don't recall if it's come through my interview specifically, but I know Bashar has spoken about a nuclear holocaust, World War III, through a nuclear event. And and that is truly the one issue that they said they will intervene in. Now, small, on a global disaster level, small nuclear events like Fukushima, we could see more of those.
Right.
But on a global scale of nuclear devastation, they did say that they would intervene and not allow that to happen. I think because from the way I understand it is when we start playing with nukes, it actually goes beyond our dimension
and going
into other dimensional realms. And that screws things up for them. So they're like, no, we don't, you guys don't do that, please.
And I also understand that there are many beings, not just, I think, the EDs and ETs, but there are many dimensional beings that are interacting with us. But there's always that universal law that you really can't interfere, and you wouldn't. If you love something, you wouldn't try to control it or manipulate. You allow it to find it on its own. That's the great part of the journey. But they're allowed now, because we've made this decision to move towards love, that and even Edgar Cayce predicted that there were going to be these horrible things that happened in the 90s, and others predicted that. And I read an article that said, when we made this choice of love, we averted those disasters, because there was an asteroid that was supposedly going to hit here. And when we collectively, enough of us, decided that we wanted to go with the Earth and become a place of love and no longer not cherish it and honor it and take care of it, those things were avoided. I mean, have you heard things like that as well?
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. They say the same thing. They say that we, you know, and this may be just my personal dissection, interpretation of all of this, but at least the timeline I'm choosing to be on, you know, they say, and maybe I'm getting this information because, again, individually, this is what I'm, you know, putting out to the world and what I'm receiving, is we've already made it over the hump. The 2012 marker was sort of the marker point that if we got beyond that, then humanity, obviously with its infinite timelines, it's going to go into this super era of sort of the new Renaissance era of innovation, creation, interaction with our ED family and friends. And we're already sort of the even though it seems right now as this all this nasty stuff is coming out, they say that this is just the final stages. We've made it over the hump. We've already agreed collectively to get over this hump, so to say, that sure, little small isolated events are going to continue to happen over the years until we can all collectively catch up to be on the same page. But as far as a major disaster wiping out humanity, the possibilities of that are still there because it's infinite possibilities, but highly unlikely. And we're heading into an era where is going to be peace. There is going to be, everybody taken care of. We're just working on all the kinks right now. Now it's just, getting us all on the same page.
And the Earth is also going through that as well. The Earth is going to a higher dimension. And a lot of people say, well, global warming, that's just a part of it. It's really, from what I know, and what the ETs with people I've talked to, channels and whatever, is that really it's an Earth change more than anything. We have put so much negative energy, not just the physical part, but more what affects the Earth more than anything are our toxic thoughts and emotions. And so this is why the Earth is going, hang on, I got a volcano. Woo, okay, I feel better. And then goes, oh, wait a second. tsunami.
Yeah,
tsunami. Oh, that's better. It was like a burp for the Earth. Oh, I got that out. I feel
yeah.
And we actually channeled Gaia on more than one of my shows with a good friend of mine, Rosalind. And Gaia just said, you know, none of this has to happen if we change the way we feel about each other. And if we start having more love, even for the people that we don't like, having more love, because then we're just feeding it. And we could make this transition a lot easier. And I'm guessing that's what the ETs tell you.
That's exactly what they say. Yeah, it's unconditional love truly is, what our reality is made of, the term of God, the term of all that there is. It's unconditional in the sense that it doesn't take sides. It allows every being, every energy to fully express itself in any way which it desires. And for us to have unconditional love, to align with that which all that there is putting us in a state of a vibration where these other energies that don't have unconditional love, that they are made of unconditional love, even the worst, nastiest thing in the universe is still unconditional love. It's unconditional in the sense that it's allowed to believe and have whatever thoughts and ideas, and if it wants to be at the darkest, deepest idea of separation and hate and destruction, it can be. But when you adapt the frequency of unconditional love, then you're aligning with a higher energy that has compassion for all, and those things that don't embrace that idea still can exist, but simply will exist in an area and a plane of existence that can't affect or touch you because you're sort of at a different perspective. You're at a you're seeing it from another level,
different vibration,
and different vibration. And the moment you hate that thing, or the moment you start to have ill will or feelings toward a specific person, idea, thing, then you're actually aligning with that frequency of that what it is. So, truly, this is why, even the, Jesus Christ talking about forgiveness and compassion is such a huge tool for us in our evolution. And when we can go to that state and have compassion for the Donald Trumps and have, forgiveness for all the wrongdoings that have happened on this planet for so long, when we hold that energy of revenge or seek that,
justice,
so to say, that's only going to propel and make that energy stronger and create more conflict.
Right. And I believe, there's a fine line. People will say, well, if there's no justice, we're going to have chaos. Well, we're not saying that people can do whatever they want. You have to hold some people accountable, but with compassion.
Sure.
And our prison systems have
to
change. Our prison systems have to go from a place of punishment to almost like reprogramming. Not reprogramming by, we're going to put a colander on your head and flip a switch. It's going to be more of, we're going to bring you around love, and we're going to give you a choice.
Yeah.
To be around that love, and if you choose that, then you can be part of this society, and at some point, maybe you'll go to another place where you can continue to do whatever it is you want that's not going to be a part of love. I'd love to talk more, but we're pretty much out of time. Ruben, if somebody wants to see your videos, your work, I know you have a website. What is your website?
Well, the website for my show is called interviewwithed.org, and that's all one word, interview with Ed. I have my personal website, Ruben Langdon, first name and last name .com, all one word. And that also can take you to the website. The other project, which is still a great resource for, ufology, if you're just getting into the subject matter, is, thecitizenhearing.org. And that's citizen hearing. There's no the in there. .org. So those are sort of the three main websites. If you go to any one of those, it'll sort of take you to another. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Ruben Langdon, first name and last name, all one word. I'm pretty active on social media. I love to post these articles and findings and research revolving around these subject matters.
You are you really love doing this, don't you?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I love these conversations, and I love watching firsthand the evolution taking place on the planet.
So it's really like, I guess I was going to say is that before you came here, which really, I mean, there is no time and separation, but between lives, this is really what you chose. Acting was just a way, and all these other things was a way to get here, wasn't it?
I think so. I have a adrenaline. I used to be sort of an adrenaline junkie and loved the stunt side of things, and now I'm finding getting my adrenaline from going within. You know, I meditate every day, and I'm a Wim Hof, a breathwork practitioner, and I'm going now inside and seeing, exploring the internal and these other realms, and just seeing the change. That's my new adrenaline, I guess.
Yeah, same here. You know, it's like the more you talk about this stuff, like you were mentioning earlier, if you focus on negative things, you're just lowering that vibration just by talking to you. I don't know if you feel this way, but my vibration, boom. Anytime I talk with somebody about this stuff, I feel like good, so good, you know?
You know, ready to tackle the world.
So thank you so much for being a part of this, Ruben, and hopefully we'll talk again.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.